Welcome back to our next interview. Today, it is my distinct pleasure and privilege to introduce you to Brian Robertson. Brian is the author of a book called Holacracy, a new management system for a rapidly changing world. He's the founder and leader of the Holacracy movement, which is actually turning a centuries-old management paradigm on its head. More than 1,000 companies have adopted this system, and the movement has the support of Twitter co-founder Ev Williams and Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh. Brian, welcome. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Shane.
So to start, I always like to ask all of our speakers this one big question to kick it off. Instead of getting into what you do, we will get to that. I'd love to know why you do what you do. So what's sort of your big vision for positive impact in the world? Why do you do this?
Yeah, well, you know, let me start by sharing my purpose. I have a sentence I use to capture my purpose in life as best I understand it. And I capture that as, I show people a radical new way to organize power. And my company's purpose is evolve humanity's relationship to power. And if you're noticing, the theme there is power. And, I really am drawn to new ways of organizing power, new ways of owning our own power. When I say evolve humanity's relationship to power, that first and foremost starts with each of us evolving our own relationship to our own power and other people's power, and how we use power together in groups and in companies. Mm. And that's what keeps me up at night and gets me up in the morning.
I love it. Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Now, one of the things that you have been actively at work on for a number of years is you've taken on the dominant mode of organizing people in power for maybe thousands of years, which is hierarchy, reaching back to empires, the Catholic Church, but of course, it didn't take on its real modern day management form until maybe after World War I, something like that is what most would say. You might have a perspective on that, but you've taken this on, and it tends to be the unquestioned assumption that most people just assume is how power should be organized. And so here it is, the primary technology of leadership and business. And many have attempted to dismantle it through the ages or replace it or even destroy it. Maybe some have tried to evolve it. To my knowledge, not very many have taken root. At least some maybe have been successful in certain pockets at certain times and certain kinds of systems. Until now, which you have introduced the world to something you call Holacracy, which has started to take root and has started to transcend context, organization, and size. So let's start there. What is Holacracy? What is this thing you've created?
Yeah, it's an alternative to the management hierarchy for breaking down work in a company and organizing, you know, who does what, who makes which decisions, all that stuff. It's an alternative way of running a company without a management hierarchy. And I love how you said it's an unquestioned assumption for most organizations today that, of course, you're going to organize power by centralizing it in a CEO or somebody at the top of a hierarchy, and they're going to break it down, the hierarchy of managers. In the same way in society, for a long time, it was an unquestioned assumption that you're going to have a king who's going to hold power at the top of a hierarchy and then a whole feudal system, you know, beneath it. But we've long since learned in society that there are more effective ways to organize power than that. Until we step into our companies, and it's kind of like we've stepped back into the feudal ages. There's kings and barons and peasants and a much more simple way of structuring power. I started with the unquestioned assumption as well. When I started, I'm an entrepreneur and a CEO. I've built a few companies. And you know, when I built my last company, when I first started it, I just assumed, of course, we needed management hierarchy. Of course, we needed a CEO. We never had a conversation with my co-founders of, you know, how do we want to structure power? Because we knew we needed scale and we needed work breakdown. We needed accountability. We needed alignment. You know, we needed these things. We need the things the management hierarchy provides us. We just don't necessarily need to get there that way. And that was the big wake up for me is, you know, we do need these things. We just don't necessarily have to get there that way. There are other ways to get clear work breakdown, clear alignment, clear accountability. And Holacracy is a framework for doing that in a different way.
It's great. Well, I, as full disclosure, I had a chance to go experience what you guys at one time were calling a taster workshop. Are you still calling it that, or is there a difference?
Yes, we are, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I highly recommend you find a taster workshop somewhere near you or travel to one, because you will get to taste, and it is the best way to experience Holacracy. We will talk a bit about some of the mechanics and all that, but ultimately, it is the best way for you to see just how effective and powerful this stuff really is. And so I do know firsthand what it is you've created, and you've done something which is a lot of the work that I do as a leadership trainer, developer, coach person, is I try to help people work on their business as much as in their business. And you have effectively created something that is really the mostly the on. Very robust and very fresh and very new. Now, before we move on to the details of that, I want to read you a quote by Peter Drucker. So this is, you know, one of the great management gurus of the 20th century. He written many, many, many books. And he writes this. One here, this is written in 1999, this quote. One hears a great deal today about the quote-unquote end of hierarchy. This is blatant nonsense. In any institution, there has to be final authority. That is a boss. Someone who can make the final decision and who can expect them to be obeyed. He goes on to talk about perilous situations and the need for that to happen quickly. And he ends with hierarchy and the unquestioning acceptance of it by everyone in the organization is the only hope in crisis. Now, this is Peter Drucker speaking with great authority. What do you see and know after all the years of you doing what you do that he maybe didn't see?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I think he's absolutely spot on right.
Okay.
You do need a clarity of who makes the final decision, but that doesn't have to be the same person on every decision, right? In society, you know, I know when I'm going to, you know, redecorate my kitchen or whatever, it's my kitchen. I make the final decision. I don't call a meeting of my neighborhood to try to build buy-in and consensus to, you know, what color to paint my walls. And that's what we actually do in most, ironically, most management hierarchies. Most decisions are not made autocratically by one person with clear final authority. They're made by committees and group decision-making that's painfully slow, right? We try to socialize and get buy-in, get consensus. That's how we get legitimacy for decision companies today in most cases. And, you know, that's one of the major misconceptions of Holacracy is when you throw out management hierarchy, decisions must all be made by groups and consensus and that's not it at all. It works more like it does in a society where you clarify the boundaries, the property lines, right? Like I know when it's my neighbor's kitchen, it's his decision. When it's my kitchen, it's mine. So in a company running with Holacracy, you know who makes which decision. And it is a clear final, you know, decision that maker for any given decision. It's just a different person for different decisions. And the system is, it's all about working on the business, as you said, and breaking that down, structuring it, and clarifying. You know, it's another major misconception of Holacracy. It sounds like Drucker probably suffered from both of these. Another misconception is that when you throw out managers, you must throw out structure. And a company running with Holacracy is more structured, not less, than a management hierarchy, right? We just get to the structure differently. We don't get there by asking a manager to break down and clarify. When you ask a manager to break down and work on the business, it's really hard. And when you get a manager who's really good at that, they get promoted and replaced by a manager who's not really good at that. You know, it's hard work. Holacracy, it replaces the manager, but it doesn't throw it out. You still have, the structuring still happens. You just don't do it by a manager doing it. You have a process that does it. And every team has a process, and we'll get into more of the mechanics whenever you're ready. But I think the key thing here to that Drucker quote is you still have clear structure and you still have clear final decision-making. It's just decentralized. It's distributed, right? So I know what decisions I can make, and I know what decisions I can't, and what decisions my colleagues make. And there's clarity. We don't need big group meetings to come to consensus about everything. We know who makes which decisions, and that's really empowering.
Yeah. Well, I was a pastor of a Mennonite church for a while, and the Mennonites have this wonderful theology that basically is anti-hierarchical. And so what they do is they like to mow the lawn. They want to make sure that no flower grows up above another flower, and so everybody's equal. And so if you're the pastor of that system, you are just another guy in the system. And what I found is that everything was done by consensus. And this was a fantastic way to lock up every decision that could ever be made. And yeah. So while I herald this, I, of course, also learned the incredible shadow side of consensus. Now, it strikes me that if you say, yes, this is a managerless system, people assume this is about consensus. But my experience of Holacracy is that it's actually more autocratic than a hierarchy. To speak to that a bit.
It is. Yeah, it's exactly it, right? It's going back to that neighborhood example, right? I don't need consensus with my neighbors when I have clear property, when I know the boundaries, right? And that's what we often don't know in companies. We don't know the boundaries. We don't know where my decision-making authority stops and yours starts, right? When we don't have clarity on that, we tend to default back to big group consensus seeking or run it up the management hierarchy, which is also slow and time-consuming. Holacracy tries to solve that by saying, let's just solve the root issue there, which is the clarity of boundary of who makes which decisions. You know, so I know what decisions are mine and what aren't. You know, we use managers as a crutch when we don't have that clarity. It's another great metaphor. Look at the human body. We have trillions of cells working together, but there's no boss cell. There's no command hierarchy of cells. It doesn't work that way. Every cell has autonomy, you know, but we do have alignment. When I go for a jog, every cell, every organ in my body kicks into gear with that singular overall direction, right? We've got alignment, but in a decentralized control system. Every cell has its piece, its role. Every cell is self-organizing. There's no outside entity that, you know, reaches in and structures the cell. Every cell knows its piece, and yet it's also part of a larger function, like an organ. You know, so the organ doesn't, it's not a command leader. It's not telling the cells what to do and how to do it. It's building on their autonomy. Their entire autonomous self-organizing function is integrated into a larger functioning whole at the organ level, right? And that's nature's way of scaling and dealing with complexity. And I love Peter Drucker, but nature knows better.
Sure.
But again, I think it's a great quote, and it really speaks to the misconceptions. You know, you can't just throw out hierarchy. I'm a fan of hierarchy. I'm totally with Drucker on that. I was a CEO for many years. I've learned how a good functioning hierarchy, the value it provides. And I think we can do even better. And Holacracy is not about throwing that out. It's not fighting it. It's saying if we get really good at clarifying boundaries and working on the structure, and we invite more people than just the manager to do that, and we do that really well, eventually we simply don't need managers because we have more clarity, right? And another way of saying it, Holacracy is not about stripping power away from managers. It's about raising the power of everyone else in the system, you know? So I, as a former CEO, I can still influence the company just fine, but now everyone else can help me do that as well, you know? And instead of me being the burden entirely on me to break down and clarify who does what and who makes which decisions, and now everybody's part of that. There's a process in every team where anybody can contribute to, hey, what do we need to do to break down the work? Who needs to make which decisions? How do we structure this? Because when we get that clear, we can go operate and execute and not have to have consensus. We can just make decisions and lead our role. We're all CEOs. We're all CEOs of our role or our roles.
That's great. It's a big part of the work that that I do with leaders also is actually helping them take responsibility for their own domain and dominion, whether they are given it or not. One of the things that you've observed, which I think is quite important, is that the organizations are full of sensors, like cars today are full of sensors. And when those sensors are properly hooked up and communicating to the decision makers, that works beautifully. But most organizations have a bit of a short circuit between the primary sensor, meaning a person on the front lines who's sensing a problem or a trouble or a thing and an issue that needs to be solved, you call it attention. And there aren't very many avenues by which to get that tension or problem that is being sensed resolved. And Holacracy is one of the best ways I've ever seen to fix that. Can you speak to that just a little bit? And here's where we can get into a bit of the technique of the system. And I don't want to, you know, go too much. I'd rather people really learn from you more directly in a more robust setting where they can experience it, but I do want them to have a taste of it.
Yeah, totally. Well, let me start with just a metaphor. I start my book with this story as well. I'm a private pilot, so I learned to fly like 20 years ago. And when I was first getting my pilot's license, I had a flight. I was a student pilot. 20 some hours of flight time. They actually let you get up in the plane and fly it alone after about 20 hours of training, which is a little scary. Mm. But it was on my first solo cross-country flight. So my first flight hundreds of miles away with no instructor. And on that flight, the low voltage light comes on my instrument panel, right? And that plane is full of sensors as well, and one of them starts glowing at me. But my instinct was check the other instruments, and every other instrument said everything's fine, right? I had the airspeed, I'm not losing speed, I'm not losing altitude, I'm navigation aid, I'm on course, right? Every other instrument says there's no problem here, you know, except the low voltage light's glowing. So my instinct at the time was, yeah, it must not be that big of a problem, right? Only one sensor is indicating anything's off. So I'll just ignore it and keep flying. Turns out that's a really bad decision. I ended up completely lost with no electronics, no navigation, almost out of fuel, in a storm, violating international airspace. bad decision, right? And when I got on the ground, I realized, this is what happens in our organizations all the time. We have people who are the sensors of our organization. We're sensing things that could be better, could be improved, or whatever. Sometimes little things, sometimes big things. And often people don't have a pathway, you know, to get them addressed unless every sensor sees it too, right? Like, I'm sure maybe some of your listeners can relate to this. Like, have you ever been the low voltage light in your company where you're sensing something? And, you know, not everyone is. And it's really hard to drive change. We outvote it. I let my other instruments outvote the low voltage light, right? We do that as if that invalidates that this one person is sensing something that really could be potentially better.
And it's not just the stress of being the low voltage light. It's also the stress of being the pilot and going, I've got lots of different dashboard indicators telling me lots of different things. And there isn't a manual that gives me a low voltage binary light in management. There's a huge range of dials and whistles and buzzes and pops, and you never know which one should I be listening to. Ultimately, I have to call which one is the right one. And I'm so far removed from it. So that this is addressing both those pains.
It is. And that was my, constant agony as a CEO. It was overwhelming, you know, even in a relatively small company, the burden on the top is absolutely overwhelming. And people keep deferring their power to you. They keep going to you saying, you know, hey, here's my, you know, what I'm sensing, what should I do? Or, you know, you do something. And more often than not, when somebody comes to me and says, what should I do about something? My answer usually is, you know, I want you to figure out what to do about that, right? Like, that's why I hired you, you know? But at the same time, I recognize it's really hard for people to do that when they're in a system that doesn't make it easy to drive change, right? So now let's get back to Holacracy, and I can tell a story just illustrating some of how it actually works. Holacracy, the goal is to make sure anyone, anywhere in the company who senses something that could be better can do something with it to process that into some kind of meaningful change without getting stuck in consensus and or having to make sure the bosses see it or whatever. So Holacracy is a role-based system. It's designed to break up the work of a team into clear roles. And unlike a job description, you might fill 20 roles in your company and maybe in all different parts and all different teams, right? So each role is a little function, a piece of work. And I fill one role. I'm doing it right now. It's our Holacracy spokesperson role, right? I get to go and tell our stories and all that stuff. And a while ago, true story, I worked with a colleague in a role called casting agent in my company, and our casting agent books me for talks, right? Schedules talks, whether it's interviews like this or like conference presentations, things like that. And we get a lot of invites for talks. So she gets, a flood of these things. She spends a lot of time negotiating with, should we send me to this conference or whatever? And several years ago, she was finding that she'd present an opportunity to me after a whole lot of, negotiation and work, and I'd shoot it down at the end of her process. Right? And you can imagine that's kind of disempowering, right? She did all this work, all this effort. She presents it to me and I say, wrong market, or the audience isn't big enough. It's not worth my time, whatever. And she's feeling disempowered. So what she does is go into a governance meeting, which is a process Holacracy adds to every team. And it's a process that does the work we typically want a good manager to do, of clarifying who makes which decisions and what do we expect of each other. Most managers don't do that work. They just micromanage. But it's ideally what we want a manager to do. But now with Holacracy, it's done in this governance process. So there's a meeting for this. And she comes into this meeting and she says, look, in my casting agent role, it's getting really hard for me. I'm wasting a lot of time. So I'd like to add an expectation onto the spokesperson role, which is the role I fill. I'd like to expect that the spokesperson publishes the criteria used to accept or reject a speaking engagement. Because if I had that criteria, I could assess it myself at the beginning of my process, she says, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was cool. And there's a little decision-making process used in that meeting. It took about 2 minutes. And in 2 minutes, she had a new expectation added onto my role so she could turn to me and say, so when do you think you'll have that done for me by? Now, the interesting footnote to that story, she was our newest hire right out of college, and I'm the founder of the company, right? Mm-hmm. In what companies do you know where the newest hire right out of college in 2 minutes can add an expectation onto the founder with no politics or egos mm-hmm. or status involved, and then turn to him and say, so when do you think you'll have that done for me by? Right? And
brilliant.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And what allows that to not have all the status and egos or delays, or she didn't have to build consensus or anything like that. She had to come in with a tangible issue that was in the way of her being able to do her role as efficiently as she could envision and make a proposal. And in that governance process, the question on the table isn't, does everyone agree or like this or whatever? It's just, does anyone see any reasons why this expectation on the spokesperson role is going to get in your way of doing your role's purpose, right? And if the answer is no, it's just accepted automatically by default. And if anyone does have an argument for why it will actually get in the way of their work, then that doesn't stop it. We just have a creative puzzle to solve at that point. So, you know, we're not using that process to make specific decisions. We're using it to define the boundaries, to define what we can expect of each other, to work on the organization, not in it. Right. And
so I remember, go ahead.
No. Go for it.
So I remember thinking when I was in your taster workshop, and of course I've read your book as well, another thing I highly recommend. I remember thinking, he's resolved so many of the things that people hire someone like me for. You know, as a leadership coach and executive kind of developer of helping people basically learn to lift at the same time and pull at the same direction and get buy-in and motivated, that's what I do a lot of. And so much of my work is working effectively what I call below the water, which is the iceberg metaphor, that the job, the task, the responsibilities and accountabilities of the job are just the 20% you can see. But what actually drives decision-making in a company and performance in a company is the 80% below the line, which is the inner work life, the unconscious flow of motivations, hopes, dreams, relationship to myself, others, conflict, tension, politics, all of that stuff is what you're managing and having to do artfully in hierarchy, because hierarchy only addresses this top stuff. What's interesting about your process is that it actually takes most of that stuff that's underneath the surface and it makes it largely irrelevant. as it kind of should be. And you do it in the most sort of respectful, humane way without sort of invalidating people's emotional life. You just kind of go, that's great. We're just trying to focus on this though. And so there's this great sense of what I would call, you do a phenomenal job, or the process does a phenomenal job of bracketing and parking lotting everything else. Sort of like people can try to admit, you know, add various things to the process and go, well, I think this and I'm feeling this. And you go, interesting, valid feeling, not valid for this particular moment in this meeting. So we'll come back to that maybe later if it's valid in another context. And it may not be valid in any context. So, and that's the end of the conversation. So it does allow for exactly what you just said, which is someone in the front line of the company can cut through every last piece of the danger and risk of telling a CEO, you're not doing your job well for me, and I need you to change. That is an extraordinary kind of achievement. Now, here's the question. You've fixed so many things that I go to try to fix. But as Marshall McLuhan once observed, every new counter-irritant, which is the invention of any new technology, actually creates a new irritant. So what are the irritants of Holacracy? What are those things when it fixes one set of problems, it creates a different set of problems? What are some of those different set of problems that it creates?
Yeah, so the main one, the big one, and it's a big one, it's a point in time issue. It's a transitionary issue. It will go away once you've got, you know, people kind of up to speed fully on it. But it's such a massive change. It is a disruptive technology. It's a social technology, but in the same way that, you know, we're used to disruptive physical technologies like, you know, mainframes giving way to microcomputers, and that was massively disruptive. That changed processes, and it really, really hurt a lot of companies to make that shift. Of course, if they didn't, they're left way in the dust, but it's disruptive. It requires behavior change and pattern change. Holacracy requires all of that. It is the most difficult, disruptive change I've ever been involved in. And that's a challenge. That's a big challenge. It's said another way, it's changing the rules of the game, right? For how power works and how you lead or follow, how you get work done, how you set expectations.
It's not just changing the rules. It's a completely different game. You go from football
to golf. Completely different game.
People are going, where's the oblong ball and where's the post? And what's the stick doing? And where are my pads and my helmet? I don't understand. What the heck are we doing here? Where are the boundaries?
Which is extremely disorienting, and it requires changing your strategies, right? Like if you're a seasoned leader and you've mastered how to play one game, you know, say take cards, you've mastered bridge. You know, if you sit down at the poker table and you play by the same strategies used for bridge, you're going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, if the game changes, you need to change, you need to unlearn all of your strategies and relearn and reframe your experience in a new context. And unlearning is harder than learning. You
know? Yes, it is. And so presumably then the most ideal scenario would be I'm starting a company and I'm trying to decide, you know, I've got to hire some people. And the best thing for me to do would be to start with holacracy right out of the gate, start with the Constitution. That will get rid of a lot of those pains. Let's say we avoid 80% of the kind of transitional disruptive pain, though there would certainly be unlearning because very few people I'd be hiring would come from holacracy, so they'd have to learn a whole new game. But less disruptive than trying to do it in an established organization. Let's say I'm up and running now. We've made it through that pain. Are there other irritants? You know, hierarchy, even when it's running well, just has built-in things that it doesn't do well. Are there any built-in things that holacracy doesn't do as well?
Yeah. So once you're through the disruption of the change and the habits are built and all that, there are definitely issues. They're less in the company, right? There's almost nothing you can do in a management hierarchy that you can't do at least as easily in holacracy. The issue is more, so imagine you're hiring, right? You can find a large talent market that knows the game of management hierarchy, right? But now this continued irritant, even after your company has mastered it, every person you hire starts at square one, right? Mm-hmm. Every person you hire is going to have to learn this new game. Some of them aren't going to want it. You're going to, take your overall talent market down just from the very beginning. Some people aren't interested. Now that said, the ones that are interested, this might be a selling point. So there's a counterbalance there,
sure. But
they still have to learn the game. Unless you're finding people that already know holacracy, and there is some talent market in that already, but it's very small.
You have some ego involved in that, meaning, you know, you are in any other organization, you'd be called a CEO, but if I go to your website, you're called a business partner. Which is, by most standards in most organizations, business partner is really entry level. And so it's really quite interesting that there's this entry level titling that goes on. And so people that maybe are looking for that ladder, looking for that ambition, looking for that title and that esteem may lose some of that in a holocratic organization.
Absolutely. And they may not be interested in joining one as a result. So, you know, there's that. There's also it tends to trigger a lot of self-work. So another irritant that is internal, holacracy has a way of holding up a mirror to your shadow stuff, right? Like when you show up and your ego is dominating a conversation, in a management hierarchy, if you're the boss, nobody's calling you out on it. It's not, you probably don't see it yourself. Everyone else might talk about it, but you don't see it. Holacracy, the processes protect the organization from that ego dominating, and they hold up a mirror to it. So people see their own ego, their own shadow. So that tends to trigger self-work, which,
great.
You know, for some people, that's like a plus and they love it, but that doesn't mean it's any less hard.
And yeah.
That also takes a toll. There's a toll on that, right? You have an environment where people are almost forced to work on themselves more, right? Which there's a cost to that. Now there's also a return to that if you do it well, but there's a cost to that. And it kind of is annoying at times. For me, it's annoying when the process forces me to do it to myself, but it's wonderful when it does it to everyone else.
Right? Yes, that sounds about right. Which is incidentally the other element that I noticed, that the work that I do in organizational leadership development is often holding mirrors up to people when they don't necessarily want to. But to have an impersonal system doing it for you is really lovely.
Yeah, totally.
Good.
The other thing, you know, I might say is there are times when just jumping in as an autocratic boss that is micromanaging, for simple issues, that's quite effective, right? I mean, when you have a really good leader who just micromanages and tells others what to do, that can be effective enough for simple tasks when your complexity is low for short term. Mm-hmm. And it can be frustrating to not quite be able to do that. You know, now I have to do the harder work of creating clarity. I have to work on the organization. I have to define, okay, what are the boundaries of different people's responsibilities or their roles, right? I have to define what are the expectations, and then I have to kind of give them the autonomy to go execute. For simple complexity things, that can be really annoying. For high complexity, it's still annoying, but it's way more effective. And over the longer term, I think it's way more effective. But there's that. That's an irritant. Although, ironically, you can still, if you really need to, if you have a lot of those, there's nothing in the rule book of Holacracy that says you can't create a role that just has autocratic authority to boss others around and others that follow them. So, ironically, you could recreate management hierarchy within the broader rule set of Holacracy if you really wanted to. It just almost never makes sense to.
Yeah,
I find that commentary.
That is interesting. So, does Holacracy require leadership?
Yeah, more so than a management hierarchy. It's just defusing it from a single person in a status hierarchy. And it's anyone filling any role has to lead their role, especially in this environment. People have a lot more autonomy. When you fill a role, you have the authority to make any decision or take any action to get the job done in that role, unless there's a rule against it. So the default isn't you need to go get permission or get buy-in or get consensus. It's the opposite. You already have it. So you have a lot of autocratic power to lead your role. And if someone wants to slow you down, it's on them to put in place an explicit, clear role through that governance process, to slow you down, right? So it's up to someone else who wants to slow you down to add rules to do it. Your default is use your judgment and lead. So if anything, Holacracy requires more leadership. It also makes it not as big of a deal. It distributes it. There's a great quote from Gary Hamel, who's another business author and thinker, and you know, he says, give someone monarch-like authority, and it's only a matter of time before you get a royal screw-up, right? And so Holacracy still has leadership, but by decentralizing it, you know, it's kind of less of a big deal. It's not like a single point of failure at the top of a hierarchy. It's just what everyone does, you know? It's like being an adult.
Yeah, sure.
You lead your life.
So what new leadership capacities are required to lead well in a holocratic environment?
Ownership, self-leadership. So being able to take whatever it is you're trying to do, and it could be something small, like I need to mop the floors, or it could be something really huge, like what new businesses are we going to launch, right? And leading it, figuring out, okay, what do I do to drive this forward when obstacles show up? And, you know, there's no bosses to just defer to. You don't hit an obstacle and then throw it up to somebody else up a hierarchy to help, right? It's up to you to lead your piece. Now, some people are going to have much more, you know, mop the floors might be their role, and that's fine, but there's still a leadership required even at that level of that piece. Mm. So self-leadership is a huge new skill. Awareness of your tensions. I see so many people unconscious to the obstacles and the opportunities that show up in their world. If anything, there's learned helplessness. People have learned in companies today, you can't do much about most of the little annoyances, so you just stop, you become numb to them. You stop paying attention to them. Mm-hmm. And one of the skills Holacracy requires is get really sensitive to those things, because that's how you're going to drive improvement. Now you can change anything, so you need to start sensing those concrete opportunities for where something could be better. And so there's an awareness building to that, a mindfulness practice almost to that. Mm-hmm. So those are just two. And then, of course, there's the skill of using the rules of the game of Holacracy. Like any sport, there's rules here and there's different plays you can make. So there's, you know, kind of learning some of those levers you can pull to get things done, which people learn in a management hierarchy too. It's just a different set of them here.
Yeah, right. Are there leadership capacities that maybe aren't needed? If you come from a hierarchical organization and you've developed, you know, you're quite an accomplished leader and people are motivated by you and excited to work under you and really eager, and you've now showed up in a holocratic organization, are there any habits or capacities that you would say those are best left at the door?
Yeah, actually, and this is part of the hard part of the unlearning, right? A lot of the things that are traditional people leadership stuff, you don't need to lead people in the same way anymore when everyone has access to drive change. We all have access to the same tools, right? Instead of managers having privileged access to a tool set to change things, right now everyone has access to the governance process and the other tools Holacracy adds. So, you know, I see in a traditional company today, there's these kind of parent-child dynamics, even when no one wants them, but managers are put in a role, an archetypal position of being more parent-like.
Yeah.
Right. And like their job is to take care of their people. Like a parent takes care of the child, and they try to be a good parent that listens and supports and nurtures. Right. And it's, of course, sometimes you get the bad parent version of the manager too, that, you know, and, but it, that whole parent child dynamic.
You create.
Yeah,
children.
You do. Yeah, and that's one of the, you know. There is one of the quotes I share with people when they're kind of getting into this. It's actually a quote of my own. It's sometimes behavior that is healthy in a pathological environment becomes pathological in a healthy environment, right? So if you're a manager who has learned for good reason in a management hierarchy, you've learned to be supportive, caretaking, good parent-like, right? And process tensions for people. For example, you're good at listening to them, seeing what's in their way, and then solving those problems for them. In a management hierarchy, that's often the best you can do. But in Holacracy, when they all have access to the same tools you do, you're reinforcing that they are a victim dependent on you to save them, right? Mm-hmm. You're reinforcing the parent-child dynamic when really you can have an adult-to-adult relationship here. So, you know, there's all the types of leadership that are in that parent-child dynamic that need to get left behind and unlearned to make way for something new, which is how do you show up in an environment where we're all adults and all have access to the same tools to drive change, which doesn't mean we don't support each other, but it's much more peer-to-peer or adult-to-adult. It's much more like the relationship an adult parent might have to their adult child, right? As opposed to, you know, you still might look to somebody to get some advice and mentoring, but you know, if you're an adult in the world, you're not looking to someone else to solve your problems for you. You know, your parent, you're taking self-responsibility first and foremost.
It sounds like Holacracy would be a good thing to institute in many marriages. I want to get sort of just a bit more tactical in the remaining minutes, just so that people can see how this kind of shows up. And I know that in a way there's an endless number, myriad of ways this can be expressed. Actually, before we get to that, are there, in all of your years of doing this, have you found any systems, either size or kind of industry or kind of organization, where you would say Holacracy isn't maybe the best option there?
Yeah, totally. Two things come to mind. One, ironically, the press gets Holacracy wrong all the time. And one of the myths that's floating around in the press and gets continually reported on is that this is somehow like a Silicon Valley thing, like, you know, tech companies, Silicon Valley startups doing this. And that just couldn't be further from the truth. There's very few of those. Because if the kind of company you're in is focused on build, grow, and sell in a handful of years, a few years, this is a big long-term 5 to 10 year disruptive change, right? And it just doesn't make any sense to take on a long-term change like this that is so deep. If your time horizon is you're building something for the next 3 years and you've got to grow fast and hire fast, and you're pulling from an existing hiring pool that are not in it for the long haul, they're in it as a hired gun for a few years to cash out their stock options, right? So one of the things I found is there are startups doing it, lots of them, but they're ones that are intentionally saying, our goal isn't to just build a company for the short term, it's to take a long-term time horizon. Those companies, even startups, even quick growth startups, the ones that are taking the long-term horizon are vastly better fits for this kind of change. Mm. So that's one. The other thing I found, the single biggest common denominator I've seen across companies doing this, it's not industry or size. We have for-profit, nonprofit, even some governments doing this, government agencies, and all different industries, blue collar, white collar, just across the board. The one common denominator.
What's the largest size?
Largest company doing this across the entire company is Zappos at about, 1,600 people. There are larger companies that are doing it in departments at a department level, which can work as well. So the interesting thing, though, with all of these, when I see the leaders, the top leader who's adopting it, could be the CEO or in the bigger companies, it's often the department head, but the leader who's adopting it is a really unique individual. They often have their own consciousness development. They're already intuitively looking for innovative ways of running things. And this just intuitively makes sense. They often have a lot of their own self-awareness and developmental capacities. And so that seems to be pretty unique. So another, to answer your question about what's not a good fit, aside from short-term time horizon, quick fix, looking to build, grow, and exit quickly, it's leaders who don't fit that profile, right? Mm-hmm. If you're adopting this more as hey, this might make things more efficient or whatever, which it might, but if that's the main kind of motivation for adopting it, it's probably not someone ready to sign up for the kind of self change that this is going to require of the leadership. So it's usually somebody that's ready to self-disrupt, somebody that's already gone through a lot of their own development and knows what it's like to change your own mindset and paradigm in a major way and is ready to sign up for that.
Great. Three big questions, kind of rapid fire, that I'm sure are the three big ones you get a lot. Hiring, firing, and salaries.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. Holacracy intentionally does not tell you what you should do with those. I can turn the question around. You know, in a company you've worked in or you work in now, have you ever had any tension about the way you do hiring, firing, compensation, or any other process, budgeting, whatever?
No, it was always perfect, right? Seamless.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone was very happy all
Exactly. The goal of Holacracy is not to spoon feed you the perfect answer to any of those things. It's to make them easy to change so that you can experiment, adapt, and evolve the unique approach that's right for your company in a decentralized environment without managers. So Holacracy doesn't just say, here you go, this is the one way to do it. It says, here's the governance process. And when you do one of those processes and you find it gets in the way of your work or it leaves something to be desired, come to this process and propose a change to it. Right. And now that said, there are standard approaches that are kind of out there in the Holacracy community. So you can start from one of them and then adapt. Like the way my company fires people, we don't have managers. So we have a group of people filling a role that's in charge of that. And we have a process for it. And it's a whole group of people. So it's not any one person that has that authority, but there's a clear process. They're not trying to come to consensus. There's a question they're asked and it's pretty powerful. And I won't go into the details, but if people come and go to one of our events, they can get more about it there. But for us, I love the way we fire people. And I don't know how many companies can say that they love the way they fire people.
Yeah.
It's human. It's respectful. We've had people we fired come back and be our customers or stay close personal friends with the people who fired them. Mm. And it's because the process is so respectful and human. And we didn't get there by Holacracy handing us the perfect process. We got there by starting with a kind of a really bad way of firing people that we then evolved. You know, someone had tension about it. So we made it a little better and a little better and a little better. And that's the goal of Holacracy. It's not to give you the right answer. It's to let you evolve and adapt.
And Holacracy by nature is an evolutionary process. What has evolved about Holacracy, if anything? From the point you started it to today, you've learned a lot, I'm sure.
Totally.
Has anything evolved about the holocratic process?
Oh, so much. We actually manage it in the same way you manage an open source software package. It's on GitHub, one of the same platforms used for open source software. We version control it. We're on version 4.1 of Holacracy now. And it's an open source document, our rules of the game, our constitution, we call it. And we have a whole community that kind of stewards it and contributes to the evolution of the core rules of Holacracy itself. Hmm. So it's a living, breathing thing. There's literally hundreds of issues in our logs that we've evolved over even just the past couple of years. Hmm. Some big, some small. And that's a result of in the field learning, right? It's not somebody's theory or idea. There's 100,000 companies doing this now. And so we're out there like talking to them, and they're coming and showing up and saying, hey, here's a case where the rules felt like they got in the way or could have been better or whatever. So it's so living and alive. We're working on version 5.0 right now, the next version. And that's going back to the way we started with just the way we run companies now is unconscious for most people. It's you know, people don't think about it and choose. In Holacracy, you have a conscious choice to adopt this, but then the system itself is consciously being developed. So we're learning how to better govern companies this way.
Yeah, it's a self-learning as well.
Yeah,
Brian, this has been a great pleasure to speak with you again. Thanks so much for taking the time. What's a next step or a resource? You know, if someone's curious, they want to learn more, they want to dip their toe in, but they're not sure, where do they go to learn more? Other than your book, Holacracy, I highly recommend it. What's another, maybe a free resource they can get access to?
Yeah, there's actually a lot free on our website, holacracy.org, and it's, people misspell it all the time. It's spelled with an A, HOLACRACY.org. There's videos on there, lots of videos that are interviews with people actually doing this, like real people living this every day. So you kind of get little short glimpses of what it's like. There's other resources. But a main one to point people to is our free webinar. About an hour. It's kind of an overview of how this works. And then there's Q&A at the end. So if people have questions, they can actually show up there and get them answered. And it's kind of the nice next step towards that to explore this a little further, dig a little deeper, see what it's like and if it might be right for you.
Great. And so how do they get to that?
If you just go to our website, holacracy.org, you'll see it right on, scroll down on the homepage, and you'll see join a free webinar, and you'll see our videos.
Great. Well, thanks again, Brian. Appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Great. Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it.